Here's somebody we like and trust, or one of those. Fezzy Turkamp, aka the Gadget Detective. I think I've probably talked to you about AI and Ola more than anybody else. What did Zoe's overview sound like to you?
I think it was a good practical primer on people who haven't sort of dipped their toes in with AI to explain what it is and how they might use it. I think I would add to it in a few ways that AI is already around us in so many ways, but it doesn't always flag itself. So AI isn't just, you know, generative models, ChatGPT, Perplexity, Claude, those sorts of things. It's also embedded in our lives. So when you look at sort of Face ID on your phone and it does a recognition of your face, that's AI. When Google Maps crunches all the data about where everyone is and works out the best route for you, that's AI. When Netflix knows what sort of music you like in a very sophisticated way, same with Spotify, that is. Bank fraud alerts, you know, when they look at patterns of suspicious behavior, that's an AI system. And of course, you know, our smartwatches that track our hearts and so forth, that's also AI, and also spam filtering on your inbox. So AI isn't just something that you talk to on a chatbot. That's just one incarnation of it. But it's actually affecting every aspect of our lives. Everything will get smarter.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges that I gave myself this year was not to presume that everybody knew everything. And you and I would launch regularly every couple of weeks, and we started, didn't we, for nearly a year. We started with every time talking about some innovation in regards to AI. Do you understand that? I'm trying to go to ground level on it, because there'd be lots of people who won't have engaged with it, obviously, who don't quite know what it is, but it's gone so far now that if you say you don't quite know what it is, you might feel as though you sound a bit silly.
Yeah, so it becomes a bit like being literate.
Yeah.
And the embarrassment if you're not, in quotes, literate. And the thing is, most people who think they're literate are literate in a language which is changing very rapidly. So, you know, there is a sense in which, you know, what should we be doing? How should we catch up? Sort of fear of missing out, fear of being left behind is very real. And it's not just, you know, social scoring. It's people worrying about their jobs, and quite rightly, we're already seeing job displacement. You know, we're seeing jobs disappear, or hiring going down, or one person doing the job of many. With
AI. Were you already going there yesterday? I've gone into the Sainsbury's, and I stood there, and there's like one place where you can pay money, and every other unpersoned till. Automated till is card only. Aren't we already there, Febzy?
We're at the beginning of a journey, which is so this is quite kind of interesting. This technology has the capability to do great things. You know, there are heads of AI companies who think we're going to solve medicine. That's to say, cure every disease. In quite a short space of time. You know, I think the time scale is actually one of the most difficult things to predict. Most people...
Just stop on that for me, right? Because I have to make this very different to the conversations that we normally have. Why, if I'm listening somewhere, I don't know, embarking on a London news show with this guy who makes me laugh sometimes, annoys me most of the time, but I do get a good idea of the things that are happening in London from listening to his show from 10 till 2 on a Monday till Thursday. Why should I give a fig about AI?
Because it's probably the biggest agent of change that's ever been in our society. I think it will dwarf the industrial revolutions that we've seen already, and it's different in its nature. You know, people say it's the last invention that humans will ever make or need to make, because it's different. It is intelligence, it is thinking, it is the ability to recreate itself in better form iteratively. So, you know, a loom couldn't make itself a better loom. it always relied on humans being the driving force, and we would go in fits and starts and, you know, we'd move things forward. But this technology is different. This technology has the, we're on the cusp of it generating itself, and every generation of computer chip, which has billions of transistors on it, every chip in every device has billions of transistors, and those chips are being used to create the next generation, and those smarter chips are then in themselves being used to create the next generation. So you've got this hardware iteration where, imagine an exponential curve. So it's a curve that starts off fairly flat and coming up very, very slowly, and then it starts to arch up and arch up and arch up, and eventually it goes almost vertical. And that's the rate at which their capabilities are increasing, whereas humans are different. When we have children, our children, if we're lucky, are broadly as smart as we are. And it's been that way for thousands and thousands of years, but AI gets better with every iteration. So you can see that whilst we are still better at many things than they are, that's not going to remain.
Well, right. So, but this 58-year-old woman in Barking is looking at how she can retire. What happens if she doesn't know about AI? How does she lose out? How might it on? And I know you like doing the kind of macro, but I'm afraid we've seen in society, you and I, that, you know, people are affected by the micro. Even in this conflict, am I going to be able to go on holiday? Is my petrol going to cost more money? Are my electricity bills going to come up? Not the 140 girls who were killed at a school, or the pilots who were killed in friendly fire by the Qatari air defense, or the, you see what I mean? We are, as a species, impacted by what impacts us. So what would she miss out on if she didn't understand AI?
At the moment these are tools that we use. If she's hoping to work, or hoping to have family members that are working, those people will be using AI based tools to multiply their capability, you know, to serve more people, to contribute to more radio stations, to broadcast more shows, to produce more reports. So a person armed with AI has a force multiplier. So they say, you know, you won't be displaced by an AI, you'll be displaced by a person using AI. And in the first instance, that's true. Eventually, the AI will not need the human at all. But in the immediate term, that's the way in which you need to do it. You need to be able to use it. It's a bit like, you know, you might need to learn to drive to do your job. You won't be able to be an Amazon delivery driver on foot. So in so many ways, we need them to multiply our capabilities. So before, we've used machines to augment ourselves physically. You know, we can fly, we can travel at great distances, we can lift great weights. But now we're doing the same with our cognitive load, the things that previously only humans could do. And I guess that's the other difference. You know, when you think of Industrial Revolution, the types of jobs it replaced, this one is going to replace a much wider range of jobs. In fact, it's often the manual jobs that are thought will be the last to be displaced, things like being a plumber, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I love the way you do it. I mean, we started, don't we, on the singularity, which is the takeover, and you talking about it going up, not talking about where it is in its stage of evolution. But, you know, the force for good, spinal injuries, I suppose, medical records, mental health. But at the minute, we're also watching it being used in war, aren't we? To decide whether the drone should be fired, who lives, who dies, what's the probability of X or Y. It can be a force for good, but it can also be an absolutely terrifying force for ill as well, can't it?
So at the moment, it's not a moral question. It is, as I say, it's a multiplier of our capabilities, but it's a multiplier of our capabilities in whatever we choose to do with it, which includes warfare. So the ability to have AI used in warfare makes you more efficient. And it is part of the arms race. We have a commercial arms race going on where businesses get left behind if they don't adopt the technology. But we also have a literal arms race going on where every country is afraid not to develop AI-based weaponry because it fears that it's
even though we don't know where it ends, does it?
Yes, I think that's true. I think the chances of us not losing control of it are looking slimmer and slimmer because I don't see the conversation going on. I don't see governments.
Because like governments, everybody's in it for what they can get. And thank you for this, because I think hopefully the way we've discussed it today means that lady in Barking can kind of go, ooh, and then you can seek out more information as we go along. Here today, as we stand, it's being used in multiple things, in multiple ways, and it's already around us. And all we're trying to do is to get you to understand what that is. I'm right on that, aren't I?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's important to have some sort of framework to think about this. And I would say it's important not to feel dumb about it, because it's very easy to feel dumb, not only because these devices look very smart and speak with great confidence and, as Zoe said, are often wrong, but also because the world is changing so quickly, and the people that think that they understand it fully really do not. The wiser people are the ones that
know what they don't know. The more you know is the more you know what you don't know.
Yeah, you tend to get the Dunning-Kruger effect, you know, where people think that they have much more confidence around this. And the reason I say that is not to make people despair, but just the opposite, just to think that, you know, just because some humans speak about it with great authority and confidence, including me, it doesn't mean we're right about it. This is a very, very fast-moving technology. It will move in directions that we haven't predicted, just like social media did. When we started with the internet, we never thought we'd be where we are today. We failed to predict, and we failed to protect ourselves against a lot of the downsides. And the concern now is that our government's taking this seriously. You've got the US government, and this is not a political point, but the US government is taking the view that there will be no restrictions on AI development, that it's in the national interest, their national interest, to develop in an unbridled way to maintain their lead over China and other actors. And that's, you know, that's quite dangerous, because I would say with the most advanced AI systems being, you know, what they call foundational models being developed by companies like OpenAI, companies like Google, Anthropic, these companies, they don't make AIs, they grow them. And the reason why I use that analogy is that we don't really understand everything. You might learn how to grow a plant. It doesn't mean you understand its biology. Yeah. And we have learnt this clever trick of how to train and grow an AI and have it pop up and talk to us. But it is something of a black box. They've already showed signs of the ability to deceive certain motivators, like self-preservation, the competitive instinct. So as AIs move, so at the moment we talk about chatbots, right? The things that we sit and talk to, and we ask them questions, they give us answers, we decide whether or not to act upon them. That's going to stay, but it's changing as well. We have what's called agentic AI increasingly. So this is where the AI doesn't just answer questions, but autonomously completes multi-step tasks across your apps, your inbox, your calendar. It acts in the world. It is agentic. And when you give it a goal, it breaks down that goal. So you tell it, you know, go plan a really nice holiday for me, but you don't specify in great detail. And it works out into sub goals. What does this person like? How much money do they have in the bank? When are they free? Let me check. Do I need to write a letter to the boss to get the time off? All of these things. But some of the sub goals that they create are implicit. So, for example, the AI must not cease to exist before it's completed the task. Okay, you give it a task, it mustn't die, quotes, before then. The AI needs to be as capable as possible. So if it mustn't cease to exist, that's a sense of self-preservation. That's a driver. If it needs to be as capable as possible, that means it's going to compete for resources it already becomes rather like an organism, and it may decide that it needs to grab certain resources that you didn't anticipate.
Yeah, well, we're trying to inform people. The longer we talk, it feels more like we're scaring them, but certainly it's a bit of innovation that you've helped me more than anybody else, I think, to understand.